Today's case is, today's teisho will be on case 46 in the Mumonkan, the Gate of No Barrier. Case 46 is entitled, Proceed On From the Top of the Pole. Sekisho Osho asked, how can you proceed on farther from the top of a 100-foot pole? Another eminent teacher of old said, you who sit on the top of a 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, you are not yet genuine. Proceed on from the top of the pole, and you will show your whole body in the 10 directions. Mumon's comment, if you go on further and turn your body about, there is no place left where you are not the master. But even so, tell me, how will you go on further from the top of the 100-foot pole, eh? Mumon's verse, he darkens the third eye of insight and clings to the first mark on the scale. Even though he may sacrifice his life, he is only a blind man leading the blind. So I would like to thank everybody who arrived last night for coming here. It was really quite exciting to see people arriving. It was really quite thrilling to see people sitting so still in the Zendo this morning. Everybody did a really excellent job. I was surprised, in fact, by how still it was in the room. I don't know some of you very well, but I'm impressed. People were sitting beautifully, really, and I hadn't necessarily expected that. The truth is that three sits in a row like that, each a half an hour, is quite a stretch. And usually people are moving a lot by the end of the third sit, if they're beginners. But everybody was sitting very still right to the very end, and it was marvelous. So thank you. I'm very glad people were able to come for the weekend. This is sort of an innovation with our group. We've started to have a weekend option on our sesshin, and people who have work responsibilities and are not able to attend, say, for 5 days, can come on the weekend and really accomplish a great deal. So this is, I think, a win-win proposition for everybody involved. And also, the weekend option is a good opportunity for beginners, people who might look at 5 days or 7 days and just not feel ready, but can do a substantial amount of sitting. So I'm very happy with the weekend option. This is a great opportunity. You know, if you sit on your own for, an hour a day even, which is a substantial commitment of your time, you can only accomplish so much. But when you come here and you get up early, you might not get up early, as early, if you're on your own. You know, getting up at 4:30 is difficult, but you get up, you come into the Zendo. You don't stop at your word processor, right, or at your computer and graze. You don't, come straight to the Zendo, sit down on the cushion, and we start reciting sutras, and then we do zazen. That's really great. And then by the time you go to bed tonight, you will have done 8 hours of meditation. And even though your legs will be tired, your mind will be in quite a different place. So I'm really happy you came today. Some people have been here since a Tuesday night, and for them it's a day four of the sesshin. And generally speaking, day four is often a very very good day for most people. You know, there's a regular trajectory at sesshin. There's a kind of sesshin is really a very very somebody was really a genius. And invented this system we call sesshin. And basically, they decided that people could practice together, which was an innovation. In early Buddhism, apparently people didn't sit like this. Everybody sat on his or her own. But somebody came up with the idea of a collective sitting. Maybe it was the Chinese. That's sort of their style. So this idea of collective sitting is a novelty in the Buddhist world. And then this highly sort of intense schedule also is really an interesting innovation. And so you get up, you know, you have time maybe to go to the bathroom or have a glass of water, have some tea, come in and sit down, and then it's like that all day long. It's a very tight schedule. And you go to bed, and then you get up and do the same thing the next day. It's possible to look at this regimen and just be terrified. But I've been doing it for 35 years, and I love it. I absolutely love Sesshin. And it's, I promise you, I wouldn't have done it for 35 years if it were as difficult as it was on the first Sesshin. It's really just marvelous. There's a regular trajectory, however, that people go through as they're moving through Sesshin, and it often looks like this. You know, day one, people come, and they have high hopes, maybe for enlightenment. You know, you think, I'll go to the Sesshin, I'll meditate, you know, something will happen, I'll go in to see the teacher, and you'll go, my God, you've done it, you're enlightened. Congratulations, you know. I knew you were the reincarnation of my old teacher, you know. How are you, you know, old master? I had those fantasies when I started out doing that. You know. Nobody seemed to recognize me, though, as the reincarnation of anybody. So, you know, but my first Sesshin, by the end of day one, I was no longer interested in reincarnation. I was just interested in survival, you know. My legs hurt so much, right? And I was so tired. I gave up any attempt to brush my teeth or wash my face. It was just, I saw the bed. I jumped into the bed. And I think I was asleep before I even hit the bed. So first day can be quite a shocker, you know. You still have a little bit of strength in the morning, say mid-afternoon, but by the end of the day, your resources can be very depleted. And then, you know, you get up the next day and you think, oh, you know, what's next? You know, and it all starts again. By the end of the second day, people can be very, very, not doesn't always happen this way, but people can be very tired. You know, a little bit distressed, maybe, or down. People maybe the third day also. You know, now their resources are depleted. You know, and they're sort of just running on fumes, and they're trying to keep going. And at this time, you usually when people flee Sesshin, they usually flee around day three. It's almost like clockwork, you know. People will come, there'll be somebody new, and around day three, it might be I'll be working in the kitchen, and somebody will come up and say, "Can I talk to you?" And I already know it's going to happen, right? It's like, sure, and they'll say, "Listen, I think I need to leave," and some people say, you know, "I've got a call, I've got an emergency at work," or some people just say, "I'm throwing in the towel," you know. And then some people, you know, yelled at me. You know, it's various responses. You know, there was long ago we were having our Sesshin in August. It was very hot, during Dokusan, a woman said, "Well, would it be all right if I?" She was already mad at me, and she said, "Would it be all right if I used the pool?" And I said, "Well, you know, actually, the pool is not part of Zen tradition." And then she was furious, right? You know? And so when she came to see me, you know, she let me know that I was very sadistic. And so And I could, and I said, well, look, if you're unhappy here, you can just go. And I thought I had challenged her to stay, but she turned around and, you know, I could hear the tires squealing on the gravel outside. You know, she just got in her car and drove off. So day three is when people decide they've had enough, you know. But if they stick it out, if they stick it out, the most amazing thing happens. And I'm not making this up. You can talk to many, many people. You know, around day three, people will come in to see me in the Dokusan room, and they're often, you know, oh, you know, everything is going wrong. You know, I wish I hadn't come. You know, my life is a wreck. You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, it's amazing. You know, it's like all the negativity is right there. And when I first started doing this, you know, there's no school for Zen teachers. I studied Zen for many years with two really excellent teachers, and then they suggested that I was ready to teach, and I waited for 8 years, and then finally started a very small little group that used to have sesshin at my house. You know, when I first started doing this, around day three, people would come in, and I'd go, how's it going? They go, oh, terrible, awful, really? I hate this, you know, and I'm so sorry I came. And it was, what am I doing wrong, you know? And I remember going to bed and thinking, oh, I'm a total failure as a Zen teacher, you know. This is just a nightmare, you know. And so then I dragged myself out of bed. I thought, okay, well, this, you know, this went on for a couple of years. But I would get up and think, all right, this is it. I obviously wasn't cut out to do this, you know. And so, you know, we'll try to wrap it up and everything, you know, I'll try to get out of this gracefully, you know. And then, you know, like around day four or five, people would come in and I'd go, okay, how's it going? They go, wonderful! You know, I'm so happy, you know. This life is beautiful, you know. Thank you, you're a brilliant teacher, you know. It's like, I had nothing to do with it, you know. It's a process. You go through a process. And it's the most amazing thing in the world, you know. By day five, people are often so open and so upbeat, and this process of transformation is amazing to see, you know. It's difficult to explain, you know, why, how is it that people can come here, and what's happening that they sort of reach this low point and then they reach this high point. You know, by the end of the sesshin, they're so optimistic, they're ready to go back into the fray. It's really an amazing process, you know. And one way to think about Zen is that we normally live in what we in Zen call the small mind. The small mind. This is like the rational, calculating mind. And there's nothing wrong with this mind. It's just very limited. Generally speaking, try to be rational beings. You know, you want to be reasonable. You want to be articulate. We go to school for many, many years, and that's a very good thing. We have all kinds of specialized knowledge. And you know, we can become very learned. We can become very competent at what we do. And we tend to live in this world of what we know, you know. This world of what we know is based upon you know, systems. It's based upon predictable patterns, and so on. And this is the world of consciousness. This is the world of consciousness. You know, ideas. You know, and especially in the modern world, we think this is all there is to existence. We put so much emphasis on reason, rationality, knowledge, that we tend to forget that there's another dimension to consciousness, which is unacknowledged by the rational mind. And especially in the modern world, we've pushed it away to the margins, you know. So people all the time have this, you know, they have this wonderful knowledge, they have this wonderful mind, But something is maybe missing in their lives or making them unhappy, you know. And it's very difficult for them to see why they're unhappy or why something seems to be missing in their lives. You know, you got your diploma, you have your engineering degree, you know, you got married at 24, you are making house payments, your income is bigger than your outflow, you should be happy, right? You know, and yet you find yourself unhappy. And that's difficult. It's difficult to say why one is unhappy, because you know we think in terms of like the reason or consciousness is all there is to the world. Recently, our culture, Western culture, discovered that there was more to this. That there's more to our lives than the conscious world. And, you know, if you are familiar with Freud and his theories, you know, Freud was really like a great pioneer because he said, you know, actually, consciousness is just like the tip of the iceberg. You know, the conscious mind is really just a small part of our lives. And there's this other part, which is the unconscious mind. And that basically much of what really matters to us is unconscious. And so, you know, something like psychiatry began as an exploration of the unconscious. And people who have problems, you know, and can't reason their way out, go to therapy. And therapy, as I was saying a little earlier in the week, is this wonderful invention. Because, you know, the therapist helps you to see beyond the limits of your reasoning mind. You know, the reasoning mind can't notice things that are unconscious. And therapy helps you. The therapist can see what you're sort of like concealing from yourself. Zen practice is a lot like therapy, you know, actually. Because instead of having a therapist to work with, you have the unconscious mind itself. You know, what we're doing when we sit down on the cushion is learning how to make contact with the amazing power of the unconscious mind. And in the modern world have more or less forgotten about the unconscious mind. And even, you know, people like Freud looked at the unconscious with some suspicion. You know, Freud thought maybe the unconscious was a bit crazy or dangerous. You know, when Freud talked about the unconscious, he thought of it as like a place where there were these ghosts and demons that had to be exorcised by reason. But in Buddhism, especially in Zen Buddhism, we have a very different view. You know, we believe that even though there are, we all do have our demons and our ghosts that we have to work with and work through, at the core of the mind, there is this powerful life energy and this deep unconscious compassion. And so a lot of Zen practice is learning how to activate this, what you could call your core unconscious mind, which is hugely intelligent and hugely compassionate. So, you know, inside yourself, you know, this morning we recited the Atta Dipa. You are the light, the Buddha said. You know, and people might not understand what that really means. And Zen would say that you have this luminous, compassionate mind at the heart of your being, and that it's become covered up by layers of fear and attachment, and so on, and mental habits that are destructive. And so we tend to lose sight of it as we're growing up. But little by little, you know, we can, on the cushion, begin to work through these obstacles and get in touch with this amazing, powerful energy, you know. So when you come to Sesshin, you know, you sit down on the cushion and you watch your breath, and you might be thinking, you might have all kinds of fantasies about what is going to happen next. But what begins to happen, if you think about it, is you start dropping down into the layers of the mind. It's just like a stone sinking down into the water. You know, you're watching your breath, and it sort of pulls you down through the layers of the mind. So, you know, day one of Sesshin, you're thinking, you know, when I get back, I've got to take care of that leak in the bathroom. Or you're thinking about some issue at work, and you're still sort of sitting on the cushion planning with your planning mind. And then, you know, you keep watching the breath, and a little while in the day, you begin to notice that those thoughts that are very rational and reasonable begin to disappear. You stop having sort of like a normal conversation with yourself, and you enter a level where there's just like fragments of thoughts and pieces of memory coming up. You know, you might have memories that you've forgotten for 30 years, you know, or you probably haven't been alive for 30 years, but 10 years, let's say, you know. Pieces of memory will come up. You'll remember things just sort of crazy fragments of thought, you know, glimpses of things that you had forgotten about, or pieces of music, you know. This morning I was thinking about Ilusha's song that was on that went viral on YouTube. His wonderful music, and it was playing in my head. I could hear every note, you know. So, you know, as you're going down through your mind, you're going from this very rational mind down to this sort of fragmentary consciousness, and then you start descending into the realm of memory, you know. And then basically you get to a level where you're really right on the edge of the unconscious, you know. And when the discriminating mind looks at the unconscious mind, it's like looking into a cave. So, you know, if you're watching your breath and you watch the breath and you watch the breath and you watch the breath, you're going to go through all of these different layers of the mind. And it won't be continuous, you know. It's not like you go straight down to the bottom. It's like you go down and then you come up. And then you go down and then you come up. And it's like a it's like a very jagged graph, right? It's like down and up, down and up. But eventually you're going to get down to a level. It may take a number of sesshin. But you're going to get down to a level where your mind is really quite blank. And if you watch the breath enough, you're going to reach a point where when you follow the breath out, you notice that at the end of the breath, there's just absolutely, it feels like there's absolutely nothing. It's just like blank. See, and this blankness is really significant, you know. Sometimes, just accidentally, people stumble into that blankness. But it usually takes a great deal of mental effort and focus. And if you're watching the breath, it might be towards the end of a couple days, you begin to notice that at the end of your breath, your mind is quite blank. And you might think, well, what's that all about? You know, it might just have a split second of blankness, and then, you know, you start thinking about something again, you know. But that moment of blankness is really hugely consequential. It's the door into the unconscious, you know. My teacher, his favorite painting was by a very famous Chinese painter. And it showed two monks sitting at the outside of the door of a cave. It was a cave, beautiful Chinese painting of this huge cliff, this majestic cliff. And at the base of the cliff, there's a little cave opening. And if you look into the cave, there's stairs, and the stairs go up into the darkness. And there's two monks sitting out front of the cave. And this is perfect. This was done by a Zen artist. And he was talking about that point at which the conscious mind and the unconscious mind almost come together. So in Zen practice, we practice breath perception meditation until we can encounter that blankness. And then we work with that blankness for a while. And what we're really learning how to do is to access the unconscious mind. And of course, people who live as we modern people do, in a highly rational, highly intellectual environment, don't really necessarily understand how to use the power of the unconscious. My first teacher was a nice guy. In fact, I loved him, Genki Roshi. But he was very skeptical about the idea that intellectuals could practice Zen. You know, I was going to graduate school, and he at first was very skeptical of whether he used to say intellectuals don't make good Zen students. And I didn't feel like much of an intellectual, but I could see that he was. I think he would have preferred if I were worked with my hands or something, because he respected people who didn't live too much in ideas. But nevertheless, you know, I persisted, and you know, actually, I think it doesn't hurt to have some ideas. You know, but they do get in the way, right? Because you keep trying to think your way through your problems in life. You know. You try to think your way out of your problems. But, you know, we get into all kinds of tangles in life, you know, all kinds of contradictions that we can't solve because life is not really rational. That's the truth. It's, you know, we build these systems of thinking, systems of thought, and immediately life violates those systems. And it keeps violating them forever and ever. You know, it'll never stop. You know, this is a fundamental fact that, you know, we create these systems, like, you know, we create an economic system, and then we have an economic crisis that's not supposed to happen. And then we clean it up, but then we have another crisis. And we keep thinking we'll get it right, but we never get it right because the universe is this very complex system, and our thought systems are very limited, you know. So there's always this tension between what we know and what's unfolding in this very dynamic, vast universe. And so we constantly experience various kinds of suffering because we can't change in response to changing circumstances, you know. When we try to use reason to think our way out, all we wind up doing, generally speaking, is repeating our old habits. You know, so, you know, basically, this can be in matters like the economy. It can be in very simple things, too. You know, you could have a relationship with somebody, and you keep winding up fighting. You know, you love somebody, you want to be with them, you're with them, and you fight. Then you think, okay, let me try this. And you try it, and it doesn't work, and you fight. And then you think, okay, let me try this. And all you're doing is repeating again and again what you already know. You know, somehow you've got to get out of that pattern, and try something truly new. But your discriminating mind, the thinking rational mind, isn't very good at that. You know, so Zen is all about tapping this other unconscious mind and allowing that energy to guide you or to inform you, you know. I hope that's making some sense. But basically in Zen, you know, we get stuck. In life, we get stuck in these problems we can't solve with our discriminating mind. And one solution is to go to a therapist, which I highly recommend. And the therapist says, okay, here's what you're not allowing yourself to see. Another approach, a little different approach, and these two approaches can go together very well, is the Zen approach, which is to say, let's reunite our intelligence. Let's reunite ourselves with the power of the unconscious mind. See? And this can give us a way of coping with life that a small mind perspective can't give us, you know. And so, you know, we learn how to watch the breath until the mind becomes stable and calm. And then eventually we get to this place where the mind is empty. And it might seem at first as though nothing is happening. But, you know, in the course of, say, 5 days, something really remarkable happens. So you come to Sesshin, and something's bothering you, you know. Maybe you lost your job. And you look at your life and you say, oh, I loved that job. I've lost my job. This is the end, you know, my life is over. You know, I gave this job 20 years, and now I'm stuck in this unemployment situation. It's over. I might as well just drive a car into a tree, you know. And you keep thinking, well, what could my life become if not this? This is all I've ever known. You know, I've only been a teacher all my life, you know. If I don't teach, I'm nothing. You know, this is the only... So you go through all of these familiar ideas. This is like the rational mind. And as it's thinking, it's boxing you in, and it's boxing you in, and it's boxing you in, you know. And it boxes you in because you can only think with things that you already know. You know, so you can't really think your way out of your mental traps. You can't. The value of a therapist is a therapist is outside your own boxes and can see the boxes, but you can't see them. You know? And the Zen approach is to use the unconscious. So you come to Sesshin and you think, oh man, you know, I've lost my job. It's the end. Or you're getting a divorce, you know, something like that, or you're in this, maybe somebody's hurt your feelings, you know, and you can't, or maybe you have more complex problems. You know, I was talking to a person who I know very, very well, who's not a Zen student at all, in fact, would never do Zen. And this person was saying to me in an intimate moment, we were talking, and this person, she said, every morning when I get up in the morning, the first thing I experience is dread. It's the first thing. You know, it's like I get up in the morning and there's the dread. And of course, you know, this is like a typical of people who have been traumatized in their childhood. You know, this is like millions of people are like this, maybe hundreds of millions of people who have gone through trauma, you know, through no fault of their own. When they wake up in the morning, they have dread. It's right there. And you can try to think your way out. You can say, well, why do I have dread? You know, I have a job I like. I'm happy in my relationship. You know, I'm in good health. You know, why am I, you know, we all have stresses, but why do I have dread, you know? And you can try to think, stop it, stop, you know. It's like, if you have an anger issue, you can say, I've got to stop being so angry, you know, but you really can't command yourself to do that, right? Because the sources of this are deeper than your conscious mind can penetrate. So you come to Sesshin and you're struggling with your losing your job, or you're struggling with a personal loss, and you know, if you lose somebody you love, there's really no way that anybody can make that right. You know, about 6 years ago, my brother died just before Sesshin. We were going to have a Sesshin here, maybe about 6 years ago. And my brother died like 4 days before Sesshin. And I thought of canceling the Sesshin, you know, because I was sad my brother died. But then I thought maybe I should go to Sesshin, you know, and try to use Zazen to work this through. And there's no way you can make that right. You know, somebody could say to you, well, he's in a better place, or he's not in pain anymore. You know, those really aren't consoling at all. You know, there's no way to make that right. You know, so I just sat in Mushin. I sat facing that blankness for 7 days or 5 days. And, you know, I was just like one big aching heart, right? You know, just like hurt. That really hurt. You know, I thought of my brother, my baby brother, you know, this my kid brother. I thought of all the times we had together fun. I thought of all the times I was mean to him and thought, oh, why did I do that? You know? Mm-hmm. So, there's no way that you could tell me something that the discriminating mind is unhelpful in that context. And you keep trying to come up with a story that will make it okay, but none of those stories really work. You know, so I went to Sesshin and I sat facing that blankness, and by around day three of Sesshin, I was really down. You know, I was down. I was sad. My brother has died, you know, and it was like the end of the world. And then, you know, around day four of Sesshin, I got up in the morning and I just felt so darn happy and so alive, you know. And it wasn't as though the problem had been solved in an intellectual sense. But the deeper problem of my losing trust in life was solved. See, that's what really throws us, right? We lose our faith in life, our trust in life. You know, you go to college, you get a degree, you get a job, you do your job well, and then you get fired, and you think, what the hell is this life all about? See? And that's what really kills you, you know, is losing your trust in life. So Zen is all about tapping into this deeper mind, and regaining that lost trust. I don't know if you ever saw the movie. It's called A Serious Man, but I highly recommend it. I loved that movie. It's by the Coen brothers. It's about this guy who he's trying to get tenure at a university, and he's having trouble getting tenure. He hasn't published enough, and he thinks he's going to lose. He's not going to get tenure, he'll get fired. And at the same time, his wife is having an affair and she's going to lose him, leave him. And his life just gets worse and worse. His kids don't seem to like him. His brother's unemployed and living with him. You know, finally his wife asks him to move out of the house, and he's living in the Jolly Roger Motel down the street with his unemployed brother. And it just gets worse and worse, you know. It's a wonderful movie. He goes to his lawyer, and his wife is divorcing him, and he goes to his lawyer, and he's talking to his lawyer, and he said, "Well, who's your wife's lawyer?" And he says, you know, so-and-so. And his lawyer begins to be terrified. He goes, "So-and-so? Oh, my God, he's a murderer. You know, he's like, he'll kill me in the courtroom." And the guy realizes, "Oh, my God, they're going to clean me out." And he just starts weeping in the lawyer's office, right? It's like it just gets piled on and piled on. So all this time, you know, he is Jewish, and he goes to the synagogue, and he wants to meet with the rabbi, and they send him the junior rabbi. And the junior rabbi is like this, you know, he's very, you know, he says, "Oh, yes," he said, "Hashem, the Lord, is everywhere, you know. I look out in the parking lot, and I just see Hashem, you know." And the guy looks out in the parking lot, you know, and it doesn't help, right? It's like, you know, my life is falling apart. I don't see that, you know. Okay. So then he's unhappy, and he wants to see another rabbi, the next one up on the ladder, and he wants to see a more senior rabbi. So then he goes to the second rabbi, and the second rabbi says, look, you know, you're asking me why God does the things he does. You know, really, he's God. You know, he doesn't owe you an explanation. You know, he made the universe, you know. You just have to go along, you know, just get over it, you know. And so that doesn't work. So then he finally wants to see the senior rabbi, Marshak is his name. And he says, I demand, and Marshak won't see him. Marshak refuses to see him. And he sees Marshak through an open door, and he says, I want to talk to Marshak. And Marshak's secretary says, he's busy. And he's just sitting there. He said, well, he doesn't look busy, you know. And he said, well, he's busy. And they close the door. So he never gets to see Marshak. But his son gets to see Marshak, because Marshak will meet, only does bar mitzvahs now. You know? So this boy goes to meet Marshak. And what Marshak says to the kid is really wonderful. He says, when the truth turns out to be lies, and all the hope within you dies. See, vat den, vat den. See, that's perfect, right? You know, Zen starts with the vat den, right? Vat den. See, that's what we're doing on the cushion, right? Beyond, the ideas don't work, you know? The ideas don't work. We can't think our way out. What then? You know. And then the rabbi says to the kid, he says, be a good boy. That's perfect. Be a good boy. You know. So Zen starts with the vat den. You know, the ideas haven't worked, and nothing works. And we come in here, and we sit down on the cushion, and we go down, down, down through the mind, and we come to that wall, that door, into the unconscious. And Zen says, you know, the unconscious is really not dangerous. It's like pure love. It wants you to be happy. It is protecting you every minute as vigilantly as it can. And we keep fighting it, you know, because we don't trust. But you know, basically, Zen is about cultivating trust. In the not just in the unconscious mind, but in the universe, and in fact, the unconscious mind is the universe. We believe. So, you know, this is really quite important. What we're doing at Sesshin, our ideas are going to fail us. Our concepts, our expectations are going to be disappointed. But it's possible. Day three, people are in sometimes like in a state of real ruin. It's like, that's it. I'm broke. I'm out of ideas. I'm in the toilet. You know, and you go to bed thinking, that's it. And you get up the next day and you're full of joy. It's like, where did that come from? See, where did that come from? That's what Zen is all about. You know, life is never going to be working out properly. You know, another thing I liked about that movie is, okay, so it all works out okay for the guy, almost, right? He gets tenure. It turns out he's going to get tenure. The chairman comes in and says, you're going to get tenure. Congratulations. And his son straightens out. His son and his kids are turning out all right. His wife comes back to him. So she decides she loves him after all. They're back together. His kids are okay. He's going to keep his job. He's sitting in his office enjoying a moment of peace and the phone rings. Hello? It's a doctor. He said, remember those x-rays we took a few weeks ago? So we need to talk about them. And he says, what do you mean? He said, when do you want to talk? He said, right now would be good. Right? Doctor says, right now. Come to my office right now. So we think, oh my God, what's going to happen next, right? And then the movie goes to the last scene in the movie where this guy's kid is at school, he's at Hebrew school, and it turns out a tornado is coming to hit the school. And so they all have to go out of the classroom and go into the basement, okay? And the last scene of the movie is all these kids standing out on the playground, the tornado is coming, and the old man who runs the school is trying to find the right key in this big ring of keys, okay? Life, 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 right? So it's like we thought, you know, it's never going to be settled. It's never going to be settled. So if we, you know, you can come to Sesshin and you can say, oh, finally, it's all settled. Peace, stillness. But please, that peace and stillness is part of Zen. You have to get to that peace and stillness. But there's this, once you are in contact with your big mind, your unconscious mind, you begin to be able to experience everyday life in a different way, as part of the unfolding of this great adventure. See, as long as we keep withdrawing from events, we keep trying to return to stillness and cling to stillness, we close the door to the unconscious. We have to be able to embrace each moment as the unfolding of this great adventure, you know? And if we can do this, our lives become very, very exciting. Very, you know, life is uncontrollable. So you're either going to be terrified or you're going to find a way to go along, to go with the flow, to go with the unfolding, be one with the unfolding of events. That can't be done by the discriminating mind, but it can be done by the unconscious mind. So learning how to enter Mushin and then learning how to identify with the unfolding of events. You listen, you're in Mushin and you hear a bird. You're in Mushin and you identify, you become one with the sound of a car. This is training the mind for life off the cushion and in the world. This is the dynamic fulfillment of Zen practice. So, Sekiso Osho asked, how can you proceed on further from the top of a 100-foot pole? So often in life we're there, right? You're at the top of the pole. You have to jump off, and you don't know what's going to happen. And you look down and you think, my brains are going to be dashed out on the sidewalk, right? And you're terrified. But if you cling to the top of the pole, right, nothing is going to happen good. Nothing good is going to happen in your life. You know, life is about jumping off that pole, right? It's about, we say, leap of faith, right? Taking a leap of faith. And Zen is about building up our trust in life, building up our sense of connectedness, okay? So, Sekiso Osho said, how can you proceed on further from the top of a 100-foot pole? Another eminent teacher of old said, you who sit at the top of the 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, see, although you can enter stillness, your training is not complete unless you can also have the samadhi of embracing the unfolding of events. See, there's the samadhi of stillness, but there's an active samadhi which becomes one with the unfolding of events. He said, so even though you have learned how to enter stillness, you're still not genuine. Proceed on from the top of the pole and you will show your whole body in the 10 directions. The world becomes your body. This is the great adventure of your life. It's you get one life as Bill. You get one life as Jim. This is your life. You know, it might be true, you get up in the morning and there's the dread, but you don't have to let the dread dominate your life. You know, Zen practice is about learning what to do if that's your baseline consciousness, right? You enter Mushin and then you embrace the moment as it's unfolding and you become one with the unfolding of events. Mumon's comment, if you go on further and you turn your body about, no place is left where you are not the master. But even so, tell me, how will you go on further from the top of the 100-foot pole, eh? He's daring you to take a step. Mumon's verse, he darkens the third eye of insight and clings to the first mark on the scale. Even though he may sacrifice his life, he is only a blind man leading the blind. So you're always blind. Life is always outpacing our understanding of life. You know, people say on the Zen, they'll come in and say, I don't know what I'm doing with this koan. It's like, perfect, perfect. See, I don't know what I'm doing with this koan. Perfect. Welcome to life. Right? You know, welcome. That's life. If you think you understand life, you're living a very impoverished existence. Really. If you think you understand what's going on, you are in real trouble. Now, Zen is about knowing you don't know and then being alive to the possibilities. Right? What's it about? I don't know. Sign me up. See, sign, I don't know. Sign me up. Right? I'm ready to go. Ready to jump.